Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Mets 360 here on Block Talk Radio. I'm your host, Brian Jura, and I'll be joined in just a few moments by Jock Thompson from Baseball HQ. Now, usually here on the program, we dive pretty deep into the Mets, and we're going to do things just a little bit differently tonight. We're going to talk about the Mets, of course, but we're also going to talk about some broader baseball issues, and I think that's going to make it for a nice change of pace. So joining me tonight from Baseball HQ is Jock Thompson. Jock, welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm very pleased that you're here. Well, let's get right into it. Tonight's Mets game, Matt Harvey was the starting pitcher, and last time out, he threw five shutout innings and looked like maybe he was turning the corner. But tonight, his velocity was down, gave up three homers in four innings, and he got pounded. So I just want to know from you, I want to get a non-biased take on him. Is this all Harvey's going to be from now on, or do you think that there's hope for him either later this year or sometime in the future?
You know, thoracic outlet seems like such an unknown injury, particularly with my not being a medical professional. It's really hard for me to figure out, you know, what he's going through and, you know, where he might go from here. But it's almost like it's very akin to trying to assess those pitchers that go through plasma-rich protein methods for rehabbing things like, you know, Tommy John and rotator cuffs. You guys had some real success with that with Bartolo Colon. The Angels, on the other hand, haven't seen the same thing with Garrett Richard, and I suspect it has something to do with the deliveries of the two pitchers being completely different. Versus that Harvey just got off of Tommy John surgery, and he looked like he was coming back. The combination of these injuries could be really devastating.
You know, we always worried that Harvey was going to pitch great the first 6 years that he was under team control, and then he was going to bolt for greener pastures. And now I think if you polled most Mets fans, they'd be like, well, you know, it was fun while it lasted. Unfortunately, it didn't last too long. And as someone who's always been a real big Harvey fan, it's just really a shame. And I have to think from a baseball perspective, you want the guys who throw 97 miles per hour with control, you want them to be healthy and have long careers.
Yeah, and if you look at his year-over-year statistics, everything is really kind of trending badly right now, particularly the strikeouts per nine. He threw pretty hard his first 3 years. Obviously, his velocity is only down a tick this year. But remember, we've changed the measurements, or at least Major League Baseball has changed the measurements in terms of how they look at velocity. And most starting pitchers' velocity is ticking up. So I suspect he's lost a little bit. And if you look at the control, it's down. The swing and miss is down. It's you're right. It's not a pretty picture right now.
You know, at the beginning of the year or before the year even started, pitching coach Dan Worthen, he speculated that it was going to take a couple of months until we saw the velocity return from Harvey. And I think Worthen was pointing towards late May as when we would expect Harvey's velocity to return. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case. But anyway, enough about that depressing topic. Let's shift gears and talk about something not depressing, but maybe a little controversial. And that's Terry Collins. And he's always been a lightning rod among Mets fans. Some guys really love him. He's a guy who wears his hearts on his sleeve. And I think he does a great job of getting his players to play hard for him. But a lot of his dugout moves seem to leave a lot to be desired. And you got to see Terry out on the West Coast when he broke in managing the Angels. And just wanted your thoughts about Collins then, maybe versus what he is now.
Yeah, you know, I got to see him a long time ago. And actually, when the Mets hired him, I was really surprised because of the way he left the way he left this area. He was good his first couple of years. I think it was 97, 98. I think we had winning records. We had players with health. But 1999 was a disaster. I mean, the injuries hit, and it seemed as though when things went bad, he got very uptight. He's very kind of an emotional guy. He wore everything on his chest, very similar to what Larry Boa has done as a manager. And the thing that I really remember about his tenure was how it ended in August. They were, and I was watching the game. The Angels were beating Cleveland, I think, by 8 or 10 runs. And that lead disappeared really quickly. And there were a couple of brawls. The dugouts emptied twice, all except for Mo Vaughn, who'd been taken out early during what, again, looked like a blowout, and who was reportedly in the clubhouse eating during the fight. And the other Angels were irritated that Mo had been wearing out his welcome before then anyway. And I think Terry put Mo Vaughn in the lineup the next day, and there was a player revolt. They went to the front office. They said they weren't going to play for him again. And a couple of days later, as I recall, that's when he resigned. So it ended awfully ugly. It sounds like he's changed a lot, and people do grow. Maybe they don't change, but they do grow, and I'm sure he's not nearly as bad as he was. But at the time, it was kind of an interesting hire, I thought.
Collins had two managerial stops before he joined the Mets. Of course, he was with the Angels, and he was also with the Astros. 10 years in both cities kind of went the same way. He had some initial success and then maybe lost the clubhouse a little bit. And it's been the exact opposite in New York, where he didn't have any initial success, but he managed to keep the clubhouse together. And I think that's a real interesting thing. You were talking about change versus growth. And it just seems odd to me that a guy who lost clubhouses in two different cities has been able to keep one together, and not just keep it together, but keep it together in a major media market.
Yeah, it is interesting going particularly from this area, which I mean, Orange County is pretty laid back, but that was one of the reasons I thought that the hiring was surprising. I mean, going to New York from Southern California is—it's a lot different environment. I'll be honest; I haven't watched Collins that, and not nearly as closely as you and a lot of your listeners have since he's gone to New York. I'd be interested in knowing what his strengths are and why so many people are interested in seeing him leave. It seems like the lack of Mets success is starting to wear a little bit on Mets fans, and a lot of it's pointing to Collins.
You know, Collins' biggest strength, hands down, is ability to handle the media. And I don't think that that's a small task, especially in the New York market. But the area where Collins gets himself in trouble is what he does in the decisions that affect in-game strategy. And I don't think that there's any fan base that's particularly thrilled with how their manager handles the bullpen. But Collins is in love with matchups, and he's blown out the pen, and he's done it year after year. And as Met fans, I think we're frustrated that somebody who's is an intelligent of a GM as Sandy Alderson is, doesn't step in and exert more influence on the bullpen situation.
Interesting managing the media. The first time that really dawned on me, believe it or not, was when I was first in a clubhouse interview and listening to Dave Roberts over in the Dodgers. And I immediately understood one of the reasons the Dodgers hired him. He's one of the very best at handling the media. He really knows what he's doing out there. And particularly coming off of Don Mattingly, who wasn't quite as charismatic or fluent with journalists. But it was an interesting half hour I spent there that day.
Well, we've got to get off of the subject of Terry Collins, or else I'll rant for the remainder of our 30 minutes. So let's talk about offense. And home runs are up everywhere, and we're deep in the three true outcomes era of baseball, where it seems like every game there's more strikeouts and more walks and more home runs. And a lot of people think that that's a problem. It's not as aesthetically pleasing of a game when that's all you see. But I want to know, do you think it's a big problem for the game, for MLB as a whole? Do you think it's the enjoyment of the longtime fans or the recruitment of new fans where it may or may not be an issue?
Yeah, if it's not a big problem now, I think it's going to be because, let's face it, the interest in other sports over baseball is all about action. And I'm looking at box scores and I'm looking at 4-3 games and I'm seeing 5 home runs being hit. And you just wonder, well, what else is going on in those games? I was surprised because last year we set a home run record, home runs per game, and this year we're going to break that record. And, of course, strikeouts are up, and we'll probably should touch on that a little bit too. We've really gotten to a three true outcome situation. And when that happens, teams aren't hitting and running. They're not stealing bases. There's not a lot of balls in play. I think it's kind of soul crushing, particularly for the young kids who want to see more action.
Now we all remember the famous commercial from 15 years or so ago, and it was with the big Atlanta Braves pitchers and chicks dig the long ball. And as a Met fan, when I first grew up and was watching the team, they didn't have any power at all. And so I guess I've always been really impressed by the big home run hitters. And when the Mets got Dave Kingman, that was a huge thing and something that we've never seen before. So to me, the home runs are not the problem. To me, it's the strikeouts. And I don't know if you could have one without the other. And it's almost like, in business or accounting, you talk about a manufacturing process that has waste. And, I think that you almost have to look at the strikeouts as waste. I mean, it just is. And I don't know if you can get around that. Do you think that you can have home runs without strikeouts?
No, I honestly don't, not for the most part, because people are changing People are changing their swing paths. You've got a guy like Yonder Alonso who's striking out a little bit more this year. He's gone from I think a mid 80s contact guy to a mid 70s contact guy. But in Alonso's case, it's working because the home runs have really jumped, and the batting average hasn't dropped really yet at all. I mean, he just wasn't making enough authoritative contact doing it the way he was. So. I get what some players are doing, and I understand the changes that are made. Alonso right now is being as patient as he's ever been, but he's really headhunting. He's looking for a pitch, and he's trying to drive it. And another function of that is there's going to be some swing and miss in his game.
Now, I think one thing that goes hand in hand with the increase in strikeouts is, at least to my perception, the increase in check strike calls. And to my way of thinking, when I watch the game now, they're asking for appeals on plays and getting strikes called on ones that you wouldn't have even appealed 15 or 20 years ago. And it's very frustrating, and it doesn't seem to be very consistent from day to day or umpire to umpire. Is there anything that MLB can do to fix the check strike situation?
You know, that's an interesting observation, and it's not something that I've really noticed or picked up on, mainly because technology has obviously allowed teams to question now with instant replay pretty much everything that hasn't been questioned in the past. I mean, obviously not the check swings. And the one thing that jumps into the one thing that really jumps out at me, given the TV strike box that we're seeing on most broadcasts, is how many blown calls there have been still on balls and strikes. Check swings to me, based on what I've seen, it seems as though that's a more modest problem than the other thing. But you've looked at this obviously more careful, or maybe you've had some different experiences than I have. I'm just wondering why we can't get robots behind the plate.
Well, I remember many, many years ago, in spring training one year, they tried to have some kind of mechanical umpire. But every time that the batter took his bat and brewed up the robot. So hopefully we've advanced with the technology at some point. But, I think that's obviously an umpire union question, and I can't imagine it happening in my lifetime, although I would welcome our new robot overlords with open arms in that particular case. But recently during one of the Mets broadcasts, the Mets have excellent broadcaster in Gary Cohen, and he made the observation that ever since replay came into effect, it seems like the calls at first base, where it used to be that it, or at least the appearance was that the umpires got the call right much, much more often than they didn't on those bang-bang plays. Gary Cohen's point of view was that with since replay has come in, that the percentage of calls getting right at first base has gone down, which I thought was a really interesting case. And we've seen so many of these, and they have the super slow motion, and you can break it down almost frame by frame. And you do see a lot of the umpires' calls getting turned over at first base. And does that surprise you? And what do you think of Gary Cohen's observation from the other night?
Yeah, I would have to know what he's basing that on. Does he have numbers that he's actually kept?
No, just gut feeling.
Yeah, because I'm not sure about that. I mean, could it be that umpires are getting lazier now that they know there's replay? Aren't they being judged on their initial calls? I mean, I really don't know. I'm just asking the question.
Well, if they're not, they really should be. But, you know, it was just an observation, and it was something that I hadn't thought of. But once Cohen said it, it kind of rang true for me. But anyway, let's shift gears here a little bit. And we just had the MLB draft. And I think that in the last few years, certainly with the efforts of MLB Advanced Media, we've seen a lot of increase in awareness and appreciation for baseball's draft. It's still miles away from what we see in the NFL and the NBA. And I just want to know, do you think that there's anything more that MLB can do to make its draft more appealing?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I mean, one big problem is that the college game just doesn't draw the fans that, say, college football and basketball does. The fans in those sports are already fans of many of these players, or at least they've heard of them or maybe even seen them play. Not so much baseball. And a lot of these guys, high school and college, they get drafted by their – and they're 4 to 6 years away from producing in the majors. So there's a lot less buzz. It just takes so long for these guys to get to the big club. I don't know. Maybe the interest is somehow improving. Maybe the question is somehow improving interest in the minor league and the college games. But other than that, I'm not sure. What do you think?
Well, I'm a big college basketball fan. Don't really watch very much college football, and I watch virtually no college baseball. But in the week, 2 weeks before the draft, I'm devouring all the information that I can get, constantly going over to Baseball America, checking out what Keith Law has written, going over to Sickles Minor League Ball site, and just trying to familiarize myself with the names and some of the advantages going on. And the Mets drafted a pitcher from Oregon named David Peterson, and had a 20 strikeout game, and you know, not too shabby for the 20th pick of the draft. So I mean, I don't know how much more they can do promotional wise, but you know, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, when most of these guys don't make it for 4 to 6 years, you get a guy drafted in the NFL in the first round, you're going to see him. You get a guy in the NBA drafted in the first round, you're going to see him that next year. And for the most part, unless you're David Clyde or Bob Horner, we're not going to see that. And that's just the way it is. It's an uphill battle.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think baseball is just at an inherent disadvantage when it comes down to this.
All right. Well, we were talking about some of the big pictures in the game, and I don't think we can talk about this subject and not talk about the shifts. Now, the Mets have a lot of lefty hitters, so we see a lot of shifts. I don't think that there's any team out there that doesn't shift against Lucas Duda or Curtis Granderson. And this year there's been a lot of talk about combating the shift by hitting more fly balls, which makes sense. You know, the shift takes away the ground balls, so don't hit ground balls, hit fly balls. But, you know, as people who've watched the game for a really long time, I think one of the first things that comes to mind is, well, why don't they bunt or hit the other way? So what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I really don't understand why bunting has become such a lost art, because let's face it, if you have a hitter whose patterns are all swinging one way and is easy to shift on, if he doesn't bunt, it's going to cost him a lot of points in batting average. If he knows how to bunt, he can keep that shift honest. So I don't really understand that. In terms of hitting the other way, obviously with hitters swinging for the fences now, they're taking a different approach. If you can't hit it through the shift, hit it over the shift. I think you're right. It seems kind of counterintuitive. Some of the approaches or non-approaches that haven't been taken.
One of the players, in my opinion, who was most hurt by the shift was Ryan Howard of the Phillies. And I think that trying to get the lefty-on-lefty advantage and the teams employing shifts against him really took him from an all-star type player to a guy who was more of a roster filler. And somebody with like Howard, who had already been in the majors for so many years, you could see him being hesitant to adjust what got him to the majors. And I guess what I don't understand is you got a guy who's a big lefty power hitter in the minors. You can't have him practicing bunting on the way up. I mean, to me, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I almost think that this has to be done early in a player's career to get them used to the idea of, hey, you know, I mean, we get it. You're a home run hitter and stick the long ball and you like to hit homers, but we really need you to do this because it's going to extend your career. It's going to help our team if you do.
Now, another, or maybe it's not a big issue any place besides my mind, but one of my fantasies is that we go back and we turn back the clock and we have a four-man rotation again. And I know that the Rockies tried it a few years ago, but pretty much they're the only one in 20 years probably who've done it for any length of time. And that was, what, half of a year, a third of a year, something like that? So can you ever imagine a time, say, like in the next 20 years, where a Major League Baseball team commits to a four-man rotation for an entire year?
You know, I honestly can't, because everything seems to be going the other direction, unless one of the things MLB could do to maybe make teams think about that is reduce the schedule, and that's not going to happen. The schedule is so long. The weather's getting warmer. These players are so big and so complicated. I think the injuries are up. We're talking about the advantages that specialization has and matchups and things like that. I just don't see it. In fact, if anything, I see teams trying to get deeper and deeper in their organizations. You're seeing it now in bullpens. The Chris Davinskys of the world and these new long middle relievers are starting to become big forces both in baseball and in fantasy baseball. They're starting to be real factors, given that reliable starting pitching seems to be on the wane the last couple of years. We seem to have had a big increase in injuries and starters that just can't answer the bell often enough. So I just don't see how that happens, frankly.
But to me, what you just said is the reason for it to happen. We have so many pitchers right now who just, quite frankly, aren't good. And I don't see why somebody, and it doesn't have to be a team at the top of the heap. Usually innovation comes from the bottom. But why somebody hasn't said, hey, you know, instead of having our two good pitchers pitch two times every five, why don't we have them pitch two times every four and look to eliminate the one guy with the ERA of 7? And it seems like pretty much every team has somebody in their rotation with an ERA, maybe not 7, but I certainly don't think it's odd to find somebody who has an ERA over 5. I mean, the Mets have it. The Cubs have it. I mean, everywhere you look around, you see teams with a starter with an ERA over 5. And a few years ago, that would have been almost unthinkable for the top clubs to have something like that.
Now, that's a real good point. It really depends on can a pitcher stay healthy and provide that sort of production going 6-7 innings, or let's just say 5-7 innings and giving up 3-5 runs and then, you know, and then calling it quits. It's an interesting question.
When I was growing up, we still had the occasional guy who hit the 300 inning pitched plateau. But I mean, I think it's this has been true throughout baseball history is we've asked pitchers to do less and less. And I think that part of that has been good. I mean, I think that some of the things that we asked pitchers to do in earlier times and even in the second half of the 20th century was just kind of insane, where we were asking people to consistently go 150 pitches in an outing. And I think that unquestionably that led to arm injuries. But we've never had somebody run a rotation, a four-man rotation, with strict adherence to, you know, 100, 110 type of pitch count. And I think it would be great if a team that was consistently on the bottom of the rung, oh, I don't know, the Padres perhaps, would just say, hey, we're going to try a four-man rotation, but we're going to limit pitchers to 100 pitches. Because my theory is that it's not the 4 days that killed the pitchers. It was the 150 pitches per outing that did them in.
That's an interesting thought. And actually, when you delve a little deeper into this, one team that is running an interesting rotation experiment based on the 10-day rule is the Dodgers. And the reason they're able to do that, of course, is their depth. If you look at the way they've handled their pitching staff this year, they will give pretty much everybody except for Kershaw. Well, everybody except for Kershaw has had a 10-day DL stint, if not two of them. And some pitchers have had three of them. So basically what they're doing is they are running a rotation in which, it might be close to something to the what we're talking about right now.
Now, the Dodgers have had to do that out of almost necessity. Last year was comical with the number of injuries that happened to their rotation, and they've had a lot of DL stints this year, but I'm almost thinking that it's at least as much rule manipulation as it is actual injuries. But you're closer to the situation. Do you think that's accurate?
Yeah, I think it is, because these injuries, most of these pitchers have all come back after 10 days. So it's hard for me to believe that half of them, they probably could have pitched in 5 days. Maybe they could have had their starts pushed back a little bit, but they weren't particularly injured.
Now, you mentioned something earlier that I'd like to circle back to, and you mentioned Chris Stavinsky over in Houston, and I want to talk a little bit about bullpen deployments. It seems like this year, my impression is we've seen a little bit more variation from what's become the standard bullpen deployment this year. Is that fair? Do you have a similar type observation?
Yeah, I do. And managers want now is to have their cake and eat it too. I think they realize that the bullpen likes order and they like roles, fixed roles. It helps, keep their mentality. This is how I'm going to be used. This is how I'll go into the game, and it allows them to project a little bit. On the other hand, when games get out of hand and there are injuries, and with performances that seem to be vacillating, they also want to do matchups, and they also want to put in their best pitcher at certain times, and sometimes they want to or need to throw them more than an inning in a close game. So I think you're going to see more of that, and I think what's going to happen with that is that you're going to have more situations like I think you've talked about with the Mets, and that you're going to see a lot of bullpens getting blown out, particularly if the starters can't handle the workload. Depth is going to be a big factor in terms of the managers that are successful juggling that particular fixed roles versus matchups and undefined roles situation. But I think you're going to see a lot more and more managers changing things up, and it's going to create a lot of confusion and maybe even some dissent among fans and in pitching staffs.
The NFL is always the one that gets accused of being a copycat league, but I think that same principle can apply to MLB as well. And we saw how much success the Indians had once they acquired Andrew Miller last year. And one of the things that the Mets are talking about is if their rotation gets straightened out, moving Robert Gsellman into the bullpen and maybe utilizing him like that Swiss Army knife. And I'll be real curious to see if more teams go to that guy who they'll bring in pressure situations and let him pitch two innings or three innings at a time. And I think that would be a really smart use of resources.
Yeah, it's interesting. Aren't the Mets now talking about a six-man rotation for the time being to see what happens? Isn't Gesellman?
Yeah, currently they are running a six-man rotation. That was at least in part because they had a doubleheader this weekend. But after what happened with Harvey's outing tonight, it'll be real curious to see if they continue with the six or if they swallow their pride and send Harvey to the bullpen, because quite frankly, he's the starting pitcher who deserves it the most. Gesellman has been real good his last four or five outings.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, why not try Harvey in the bullpen? He still can throw 93, 94, and maybe that'll be a way to jack his velocity up. It's happened before.
Well, we're just about out of time. I want to get one question in here real quick, and that's a little feature of the podcast. And each week we talk about a crazy prediction, and I'm going to give you one, and then I want to turn around and have you give me one as well after you talk about how crazy or not crazy mine is. And my crazy prediction this week is that of the current six division leaders, that five of them will not end the season that way. Is that crazy?
I don't think that's crazy. I don't think that's crazy at all. There's been too many injuries. There are too many teams that, I mean, last year in March before this season, the Cubs looked like a shoe-in for the playoffs. I don't think they are right now, and I think their starting pitching is part of the problem there. And I don't see where they're going to get it from, because there's not a lot of starting pitching on the trade market, and they don't have a lot in their organization. So I don't see your crazy thing all that crazy.
All right, well, let me defend my prediction then, because right now you mentioned the Cubs, and I agree with everything you say, but they're not leading the division. The Brewers are. And then right now we have the Astros, who I think have a 12 game lead, and then you have the Nationals, who have an 8.5 game lead. So you think that both of those, or at least one of those teams, is going to lose their lead?
Well, if you look at the Nationals bullpen and you look at the shape of the Astros pitching, and again, we're talking about early June, honestly, the crazy thing that I was going to give you was something feeding off of your crazy thing. I actually see a path for the Angels of all teams to make the playoffs. Now, you could say this about all 500 teams, and that's what they're playing right now. But they entered tonight half a game out of the second wild card. Trout is talking about coming back early. Eric Young is on fire. Bedrosia is coming back tomorrow night. Norris and Blake Parker have been fine out of the bullpen, along with Yosemiro Petit. J.C. Ramirez and Alex Meyer are starting to develop a little bit as starting pitchers. And if they could just get Tyler Skaggs and Garrett Richards back in August, this is a very weak division. And other than Houston, who I still don't see as a shoe-in right now, given what's happened to their starting pitching, I actually see a path for the Angels that I did not see at the beginning of the year.
Now, certainly, if at the beginning of the year or even the first month of the year, if you talked about the Angels making the playoffs, that would have been absolutely 100% certified, send for the men with the straitjackets type of crazy.
It would have been you're a homer.
Well, yeah. But the bullpen has been surprisingly good for, 2 years now at least? And the starting pitching... Go ahead.
Yeah, the pen is much better this year. The pen was the pen wasn't great last year. The starting pitching was awful. Starting pitching again got injured early, but their injuries, hopefully, and again, the real key for all of this, I think, we're talking about the playoff, is health going forward. The healthiest teams are the teams that are going to wind up in the postseason. They're going to need to get one of Skaggs or Richards back, and that's where the long shot comes in. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
So it's very depressing as a Mets fan to hear you say that the healthy teams are going to make the playoffs, because however true that may be, it doesn't seem like that's the fate for the Mets this century. Well, Jock, I appreciate you joining us. To me, the time flew by tonight, and thanks for being on the show.
Hey, it was fun, Brian. We'll do it again.
Great. Well, thanks everyone for tuning in, and please join us again next Wednesday night at 11 o'clock here on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everyone.